By the time you finish listening to this podcast, it's likely there will be more stories out there about abusive hockey coaches. Right now, as we're recording this and as you're listening to it, the sport is facing a reckoning. It began with the toppling of one of the biggest dominoes in the game.
Mike Babcock out as coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight.
With every mounting loss, his position became more and more tenuous. And tonight, his reign over Leafs Nation is over.
Mike Babcock was fired by the Toronto Maple Leafs for the same reason tons of hockey coaches have been fired before him. His team was underachieving. He might have been a bigger name than those other coaches, but still, not unusual. Then, the story started.
During the 2016-17 season, Mitch Marner had a private meeting with Mike Babcock, and the coach asked the then rookie to list the players on the team from best work ethic to worst. Marner complied, not realizing that Babcock would then show his list to some of the players ranked the lowest.
And not long after that, it became clear the stories weren't just about Mike Babcock.
Major allegations made against Calgary Flames head coach Bill Peters, a former NHLer, Akeem Alou, who spent some time with the Flames in the early part of this decade, calling out Peters for his alleged use of racial slurs while they were both part of the Chicago Blackhawks organization.
And now, players are saying publicly things that used to be kept behind closed doors at all costs. And the NHL and almost every league below it is realizing that it has a problem, or more accurately, that it has had a problem. For quite some time now, the question is, what happens next? What do they do about it? What changes? Oh, and the Leafs, they've been playing a lot better since they fired the guy who humiliated one of their best players. Who'd have thought? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Jeff Blair is a senior writer at Sportsnet.ca. He is the co-host of Writer's Block on Sportsnet 590 The Fan every day. He has covered a lot of dressing rooms and locker rooms throughout his career. Hey, Jeff.
How you doing, Jordan?
I'm doing well. You've covered a lot of dressing rooms and locker rooms over the years.
Yeah. I was thinking about this the other day when this stuff happened with Akeem Alou and Bill Peters. I was thinking to myself, have I ever seen a locker room where I thought something really poisonous had happened? And I think because on balance, I spent more time around baseball clubhouses than anything else. And initially, when I started reporting in Winnipeg, CFL locker rooms, it's kind of a little different than hockey. I mean, baseball, there have been African-American players. There have been Latino players. I mean, baseball has its issues, but it's nothing to go in a clubhouse now and see that the white players are in the minority. I mean, that's just the way it is. And the CFL, when I covered it, it's the same thing. And I don't remember any relationship with a manager, a coach, or a team when I thought was particularly toxic. I mean, there are examples of tone deafness. But what I think happens more often than not in a lot of these situations is just the manager, coach, whatever you want to call it, becomes tone deaf to things.
Well, why don't you start then by explaining how we got here, started with Mike Babcock and the Leafs.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. First of all, I'm a little concerned that people are sort of mixing Mike Babcock, not you, but people in general. People are kind of going, oh, Mike Babcock and then Bill Peters. Because, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Mike Babcock seems to have tried some caveman sports psychology on Mitch Marner.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about that.
Mitch Marner, in his first year, the story is now that everybody's confirmed it, Mike Babcock wanted him to work harder. So Mike Babcock called him into his office and said, list your teammates in terms of hardest working to least hard working. And tell me where you'd put yourself. So Mitch Marner, coach wants him to do this, so he goes ahead and does that. And somehow, I don't know when it came out, but somehow Mike Babcock essentially went to some of the guys that were below Mitch Marner and said, Mitch thinks he works harder than you. You know, this guy's dogging it right now, and he thinks it works harder than you. And the best line out of the whole story, and God love Mitch Marner, but the best line of the whole story is Mitch Marner just kind of shrugging and going, yeah, nobody took it seriously.
Right.
You know, it's like, that's just Babs. So, I mean, and there are stories, you know, you can go, God, stories about what coaches used to do for motivating players or trying to catch players. I think it was Scotty Bowman. Scotty Bowman got tired of his team's missing curfew. So Scotty Bowman would go down and I can't remember which city this was, went down to the front desk of the hotel, and I think curfew was midnight, went down to the front desk of the hotel at 11:30, gave a stick to the doorman and said, do me a favor, when the guys come in, get them to sign the stick, and we're going to auction it off to charity. So the next day, Scotty goes into the locker room. These are all the guys that showed up after midnight. Their names are on the stick. So, I mean, stuff like that is, you know, that's all part of
it's an old school coaching mentality, whatever you think of it.
Yeah. And I mean, at the heart of the coach player relationship, and this is, and we'll talk specifically about Bill Peters and Akeem Olu, because it's a point I think people are missing. I mean, at the heart of a coach player relationship, it's a power relationship, right? I'm the coach. I control the most important part of your career. I control your ice time. I control how many starts you're going to make. I control how many at-bats you're going to get. I control if you're going to be coming in the ninth inning. I control if you're going to start back-to-back games. Like, eventually, I control your earning power. This is sort of at the root
of it. That's the traditional relationship.
That's a traditional relationship.
Is that changing?
It is in the NHL. I find this fascinating because the four major sports in North America right now, if you look at sort of the player's relationship to power in the game, the NBA is a player's league. It just is. Players are getting lots of money. They make a lot of money from shoe deals. So they're comfortable financially outside of what they're earning contractually. Like Shaquille O'Neal didn't spend any money he made playing basketball. He invested it all. He lived off his shoe deals. Coaches have no power over anybody in the NBA. The NFL's, you know, you're a disposable piece of meat. There's no such thing as a guaranteed contract. Baseball's always had a very strong players association. It's kind of splintered now, and I think we're kind of in an every man for himself era. But what's happened in hockey is there has been an influx of really talented, really young players. And because of the way the NHL's collective bargaining agreement is set up, you essentially now have a bunch of guys who are 22, 23, or 24 making $8 million a year under contract for 5, 6, or 7 years. And that's the biggest difference to me is that players always used to make more than the coach. And this is specifically the NHL. Players always used to make more than the coach.
Right.
But now they've got more term. So if you're Mike Babcock and you've got 3 years left in your contract, you've got Mitch Marner, he's got 6 years left, he's making $10.5 million a year. How do you motivate that guy? How do you manage him? What are you gonna take his ice time? It doesn't matter to him. Take 2 minutes ice time away from me. I'm getting $10 million a year. And by the way, I got a job here 4 years down the road. Can you say that? So hockey more than any other sport, I think, is going through this. And hockey is going to have to adapt. And the coaches are gonna have to adapt. The players aren't gonna have to adapt. The coaches are gonna have to adapt. And this gets the Bill Peters situation and why I think this is particularly vile. You know, first of all, I mean, there's no statute of limitations in racism. So, you know, I've heard people make the case, well, he said this 10 years ago, three organizations ago, he wasn't even with the Flames. You have somebody claiming that he used the N-word, that he used a racial epithet. You have that player's teammates backing you up. You have subsequent, you know, you have players coming out who played for Bill Peters in Carolina saying, hey, he physically abused me. You have players coming out and saying, yeah, not only did he physically abuse, like Rod Brind'Amour, not only did he physically abuse guys, but you've got players saying, oh, by the way, we spoke to Ron Francis, who was general manager of the team at the time, and he didn't do anything
about it. Yeah, there was something wrong.
There was something wrong. But the Akeem Olu situation is really, I find it really bothersome because what was he supposed to do? You know, these guys are playing in the American Hockey League. They're not making a lot of money. Bill Peters, when he was coaching that team, the Rockford IceHogs, he held their future in his hands. So if you're a guy like Akeem Olu and you're trying to establish yourself or you're trying to get your career going to your general manager and ratting out your head coach as a racist is probably not a good career move. And I think more than anything else, what this says is that at that time, 10 years ago, that organization, the Chicago Blackhawks, there wasn't a structure in place. I mean, I'm not going to say that guys don't yell things at each other in the locker room or on the ice. I mean, we know they do. You know, we know that racial epithets, unfortunately, are still a part of the sort of the on-ice, on-field dialogue in sports. I don't think this happens now, though. Like, if we were rewinding this and Akeem Olu had been, and Bill Peters had used
today,
that word, I don't think that happens because he reports it to somebody or he goes on social media then. And it's taken care of. But it bothers me that people are saying that, some people are saying, well, you know, 10 years ago, and you know, nobody else stood up. People have to understand that, again, this gets to that power relationship between the player and the coach. There's no way the player could, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to sacrifice your long-term financial future because of this? I mean, I'm not saying that means Bill Peters is right, but hockey, I think more than any other sport, just by the nature of how players are developed, kids leave home, kids go to towns, cities, they're billeted with people.
They're dependent on that whole power structure.
They are dependent on the power structure. They're absolutely dependent on the power structure. And I think maybe that's what has created this culture around hockey. The NHL is really, really trying, I think, to find a way, and I mean the NHL in general, teams, coaches are trying to find a way to deal with the new age of players. The ultimate lesson, the lesson from hopefully for this whole thing with Bill Peters is that there has to be, every organization has to look at itself and say, do we have the structures in place that if this does happen, our guys can feel free talking to somebody about it?
Do you think the kind of culture we're talking about today comes from the NHL and then trickles down to all the minor and midget coaches who want to be NHL coaches, or the other way around?
That's a really good question. I tend to think it's the other way around because the NHL's undergoing a shift right now where, you know, you've got players now who spend their summers working with skill coaches. That's something you used to do. You used to go to hockey school in the summer. And then once you got to the NHL, you never bothered. I mean, you'd have scrimmages with guys in the summer, and then you'd go drink beer, and then you'd go boating in the Muskokas, and you'd come back and scrimmage. What you're seeing in hockey now is a lot of stuff kids started doing when they were 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. That's starting to creep up into how they do their business now that they're pros. We talked about Sheldon Keefe, the new Leafs coach. He's got skill sessions in his practice. He's got 9 coaches on the ice. His Marley's assistants, the Leafs assistants, Barb Underhill, their skating coach. And instead of working on line rushes, they're working on how do you retrieve the puck from the boards and get it down the ice. And then he has music going while practice is on. All that is stuff that you've seen at younger age groups. So I think that change is going to have to come from the ground up. You know, and I think a lot of minor sports organizations, a lot of minor hockey organizations, they're doing things, you know, like no coach is allowed to be in a room with a player alone. There's got to be another adult. It's stuff that, you know, some people may roll their eyes at, but those are structural things that prevent stuff from happening or allow stuff when it does happen to be addressed. So I think it's going to be, you're going to see it coming up.
What did you think yesterday, and it's still happening as we're recording this,
right,
when you see player after player come out on social media? Not all of them are naming coaches,
right,
or describing specific incidents, but they're all saying, this kind of stuff happened to me, and it happened to a lot of guys I know.
I think it's great. I really do believe you need to get stuff out in the open. I'm beginning to realize after, you know, reading some of the stuff Akeem Alou said about sort of seeing what's happened to Colin Kaepernick and how that has kind of, that was part of the reasons he came out and he said what he did. And I've always looked at Colin Kaepernick, that's kind of an NFL issue. You know, NFL racism, that's an NFL issue. I'm beginning to think that Colin Kaepernick, sort of 2.5 years in the wilderness, it's going to be a huge turning point for athletes. And you're going to hear more of this. I'm not surprised, unfortunately, because as I said, you kind of know a bit about the hockey culture and the way players are developed. Finally, players seem to feel comfortable talking about this. And I don't know if it was necessarily the whole Mike Babcock, Mitch Marner thing. Again, that's a completely different issue. But I think this is the idea that hockey has always had these issues with kids and at the junior level and all that. And it's like that the investigation kind of stopped once you got to the NHL. And now I think people are taking a look at the actual NHL culture. And it's the players who are leading the way. And it's kind of funny because a lot of them are ex-players. Like they're not, I don't know if you'd call them millennials. They're a little older than the guys who are in the league now. But I really think it's good. And I think, again, if the NHL's smart, if NHL teams are smart, they're looking at this and they're saying, you know, we need to talk to our guys. And you start by talking to the team captain and you tell your players, you know, there's an avenue here.
What I found interesting about how Babcock kind of kicked this off is not because he's alleged to have done anything remotely like some of the Peter stuff that we're discussing,
right.
But because if there was a coach who was too big to fail, it was Babcock, right?
Yeah.
He's an Olympic champion. He's a Stanley Cup champion. And if he can be fired because he lost the locker room and because his tactics weren't working on young players, mm-hmm. then that's a big shift in the power dynamics you're talking about. And then you can speak out.
And who had a hand in his firing? A guy who played for him, Brendan Shanahan,
mm-hmm.
a guy who, you know, he hired him and he knows Mike Babcock. It is a real shift. And I think the other thing that people might be missing about Mike Babcock is, and you know, we were talking a little bit before he went in the air about why haven't we heard? I mean, we've heard stories from players like Mike Commodore and all these guys, kind of these fringe players. Mike Babcock's an asshole and da-da-da,
sure,
etc.,
but
etc.,
not
etc.
from his core in Detroit that he won with.
But I think part of the reason there is, at least with the Canadian hockey players, Mike Babcock is also part of the Hockey Canada power structure.
Right.
And do not underestimate the cachet that comes with being the Olympic coach. And I think that Mike Babcock's a powerful guy. When that was one of the reasons when the Leafs hired him, everybody was happy because this is like instant culture change. This guy brings a whole culture with him.
It's just not the right culture anymore, maybe?
It's not the right culture for this group of players.
Is it because they're so young?
I think it's because they're young. I think it's because their general manager is really young. Like, we know that Kyle Dubas, and he's talked about this. I mean, he texts his players in the summer. Hey, how's it going? Are you out in the lake? Hey, I read this article on motivation. You know, I'm just passing it on to you. You know, how are the fam? I think that's also factored into this because the players have the general manager who's a little older than them and is simpatico, to use his words. And then they've got this hard-ass coach. I think what happened to Mike Babcock is once Kyle Dubas took over, and I don't think this was intentional, but I just think Mike Babcock found himself young GM, really young players, all of them under contract, all of them super good. God, I'm a dinosaur.
How do I take control of this situation?
And that, again, a guy who's used to
mentality.
That power relationship, right? How do I, okay, I got to get power over this situation. He clearly didn't know how to do it.
So you've kind of mentioned a couple of times that this could be a good thing if NHL teams, you know, are start to look at their own structure and say, how can we make sure this isn't happening in our house? What comes next at an actual structural level, right? It's one thing for them to sort of look inward and say, should we address this or whatever? But what could actually happen to turn this into a positive and encourage the next Akeem Alou to feel like he can speak out without waiting 10 years?
I mean, I think where this goes now, the NHL, as I said, I think NHL teams need to ensure that they have a structure in place for these to be reported. I think the National...
Like an HR department.
Like an HR. I think the National Hockey League Players Association has to step in here now and say, okay, get the player reps together. We need to take control of this situation now. And professional athletes are the most conservative people on the planet because... to essentially get to where they are, the system's probably worked for them. I mean, if you're Austin Matthews, you're, the system's worked for me. I'm 20-odd years old, pretty good looking. I'm making a lot of money. I'm a star. Do I really want to change? Like, am I in favor of overhauling the system?
There's a reason why you said it was ex-players speaking out. Largely is.
Yeah. But I do think that we are going to see that. I think we're going to see the NHL Players Association. You know, I mean, the NHL's got its inclusivity program and the NHL has, I mean, they have tried to expand their base into different communities, different ethnic communities, largely the economics of it, because those are the growing communities in North America. Those are the people who are going to buy your product. And oh, by the way, eventually this league is going to have more African American or East Indian players, because that's our country is changing. The face of the country is changing. I think it's really important that the NHL realize that in addition to taking all these sort of official steps, do unofficial things to make it more comfortable for players. And I really do think the NHLPA can take the lead in that. Players have more control in the NHL now than they've ever had. This is a really good moment to use it for something other than their economic gain. This is a really good moment to use that control to try to make a better workplace environment. Knowing sort of what we know about some of the young players, I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see guys like, whether it's Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews, I think you're going to see guys start to take more control of the situation here. It's a horrible thing, but I think at the end of the day, and it may take a year, it may take 2 years, I think the NHL may be in a better place because of this.
I hope so. Yes, yeah. Jeff.
No problem. Thank you, Jordan.
Jeff Blair of Sportsnet.ca and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. Find us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. Find us in your podcast player, whichever one you might prefer. If it lets you, leave us a 5-star review, or even better, type something. Say something nice. It's good for the soul. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.